What is going on, people of the interwebs? Welcome to Season 2, Episode 15, otherwise known as Episode Number 40. We have reached a big 4-0. Welcome to another episode of the Reverent Babble Podcast. This is Cody Kelly.
Hey, hey, it's Neil Huntley.
We're so happy that you come back to join us for yet another episode. So, Neil, what's new with you?
Oh, man, what's new with me? Let's see. had a really good weekend. I'm trying to even go back to what we did over the week. Oh, we had a little family get-together with some of Amberside, the family, that we hadn't seen since, you know, the beginning of all the craziness that we know as the world now.
Yes.
And but we got together with them, saw them, had a good time. Even though it was pouring down rain Saturday, we still had a little cookout, which it was more of a cook-in kind of deal.
Yeah.
Because the place we were at, they had a picnic area, but they also had like an inside area too. So that was nice. So we hung out in there most of the time and
that's cool.
Just really talked and had a good time. But that was really fun. And then yesterday, Monday, James, our friend James that's called in on the show before, he texted me over the weekend and asked if I had any plans. I said, no, I'm pretty clear on Monday. What's up? He had a extra ticket to go watch some high school baseball. And so I got to go up to Kannapolis last night and watch A.L. Brown take on Northwest Cabarrus.
Wow.
And baseball fans should know, what's his name, Corey Seager.
Yes.
He played for Northwest
Cabarrus High School, yes.
And so James actually has two students in his youth group that play for Northwest.
That's
so that's
cool.
How he got the tickets. And that was the first time I've been to Kannapolis, the new ballpark.
Yeah.
I think it's called Atrium Health Ballpark or something like that.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Oh, man, that's a beautiful ballpark, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've seen pictures and a couple of videos of it, but you sent me a couple of pictures of it last night at the game, and I'm like, you know, that was some pretty good seats that you had. I mean, even though you weren't, like, right on the line,
yeah,
just the look of the field just looks pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's and if you're familiar with Kannapolis, it's right in downtown Kannapolis. I never went to an Intimidators game. I just never got up that way.
Oh, really?
And so I don't know what the old stadium looked like. I know it was probably just your typical single A
stadium. Yeah, pretty much.
That was just, you know, basically a glorified high school stadium. but this one, man, this is all. I mean, this could easily be a double A stadium. I mean, it's really good size.
Pretty sweet.
It's pretty sweet. It's got a big old top. It's a 30 foot wall in center field, and then the batter's eye above that. You know?
Oh, wow.
Which is really cool to see.
Yeah.
And but I mean, it was a tight game. James was telling me that a couple of his students were saying that they might 10 run rule A.L. Brown, and that was not the case. It was one and nothing going to the bottom of the seventh. A.L. Brown being the home team since it was in Kannapolis, you know.
Yeah.
And they scored one run, and then a guy hit a triple that had the game-winning run coming home. They threw the game-winning run out at the plate, which was awesome to see.
Yeah,
it was
pretty
a perfect
cool
cutoff throw and everything.
That's cool.
So then had a runner on third, okay, with one, with two out and a guy batting. And guess what happened, Cody?
What?
A balk.
A balk?
Yep, with a guy on third. So the A.L. Brown went on a balk-off.
A walk-off balk.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely not something you see every day.
Nope, not in a tight game like that either. Watching from an unbiased perspective, because I had no, you know, I wasn't cheering for either team.
Right.
I didn't see the balk, okay? I don't know what the guy was calling.
Well, to be honest, whenever a balk is called, whether it's in a game-winning situation or just whenever it's called, most of the time when it's called, I don't see it either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there are obviously times where you see it, it's like, okay, yeah, it's kind of
right,
obvious. You know, but like, sometimes on the box called, you're like, okay.
Now, whatever. Granted, with the runner on third, just the guy that was pitching was left-handed. So, I mean, any little flinch over towards third base, you know, that he was
right,
going to call it. And I was talking to our friend Scott Kendall last night on the way home, and I'll quote him. He said, that sounds like a classic high school umpire that's just ready to go home.
Well.
But that was a good time. Beautiful ballpark.
Awesome.
I'm going to have to go back up to the Cannonballers game for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Just to see that. Just
same
see,
here,
see
for
it
sure.
In action. That was a good time. But other than that, I'm just enjoy being at home, playing some MLB The Show.
Yes.
I redid my creative team. You know, I relocated the Rays to
yes,
Charlotte. And they are now called the Charlotte Crowns.
Oh, the Charlotte Crowns.
Yeah. It has.
So you changed it from the Downforce.
Yeah, I changed it from that. Yeah. The NASCAR thing was kind of cool, but it was kind of, I mean, I try to make stuff so that would be somewhat realistic.
Realistic,
you know?
Looking, right.
And that was kind of gimmicky, which was cool, but I was like, I'm not feeling that. I couldn't, and that was when I was trying to figure out how to create the logos and all that stuff. Because that's
right,
so detailed, man.
Extremely.
It's so
extremely
detailed.
Yes.
But I found where somebody had made and uploaded a version of the LA Kings Crown, you know, the hockey team.
Yeah.
And I downloaded that and changed the colors to Panthers colors.
That's cool.
And it has like a little White Sox vibe to it, like the font and everything.
Okay.
And it's cool looking.
Oh, like the White Sox vibe, like are your jerseys like pinstripes?
Yeah,
or something?
They're white with pinstripes. Okay. And, but they have this like a vest look to them because there's black sleeves.
Oh, okay.
And then the ways are black with blue numbering and stuff like that.
So basically, it's a White Sox Rockies combination with blue.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. And I couldn't think of any other colors that would go well. I would just pretend that, you know, if David Tepper is owning the Charlotte FC, he might as well buy a baseball team and bring them up here to keep all the same colors.
Yeah.
But
right, hey.
So, but yeah, getting hanging of that game is fun. And I've enjoyed it. I know you just got it. Have you played any of it yet?
I haven't, played a ton of it to start because I just got it. I just got it yesterday. So I just got it on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, so I haven't had a ton of time to, take a really deep dive into it yet. But, really the main thing right now is I'm trying to figure out what franchise team I want to do because I'm not sure if I want to just make a new team like you did or just take a team that already exists and just do a full-blown rebuild or whatever.
Right.
Something like that. You know, so that's something I'm still trying to figure out because for last game, I did a rebuild of the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, okay.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because it took me 4 years to make the playoffs and it took me 6 years to win the World Series.
Oh, so yeah.
I mean, it wasn't one of those deals where it was just okay, I'm easily in the playoffs. I mean, it took a lot of, you know, team changing. I had to make some really hard trades, too.
Yeah.
But probably what happened best for me in that franchise is I did end up signing a Freddie Freeman to be my first baseman. So that was kind of helpful.
That's when you know it's a video game when Freddie Freeman was a free agent.
Yes. Yeah, I know. Because really the biggest signs I have were him and Syndergaard from the Mets.
Okay.
You know, but it's funny because they were division rivals. Now they're on now both of them are on my team. So that was kind of cool.
Well, cool. Well, other than MLB The Show, what else have you been up to since we last talked?
Well, let's see. Well, yesterday I did a Zoom call interview because you know how a few episodes we had a Zoom call interview for our Double Play Devo. I think that was 4 episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And so this past weekend, Bradley Brown, who's also a former Wingate baseball player and a really close friend of mine, texted me last weekend and he actually asked me if I wanted to do a Zoom call for the podcast because we had been talking about it for the past few weeks and, you know, we had some conflicts and schedules and just things like that for the past few weeks, you know, so we weren't able to do it for the last few weeks. But then yesterday morning, he had some time off to do a Zoom call and he asked me if I would be able to do a Zoom call with him for the podcast on Monday. And I said, yeah, that was cool. So we ended up doing that on Monday morning. And once this portion of the show is over, kind of like the intro and the, you know, and the what's new with you part that we usually do after this, this will be the Double Play Devo for the week, you know, so definitely look forward to that for sure.
That's right. So if people, y'all listening, if you think, man, Cody's not letting Neil get any questions in on this interview, I'm not there. Okay. it's this is a pre-recorded show and that's a pre-recorded of the pre-recorded. So it's a pre-recorded inception. But
yeah, I know, right?
But
pretty insane.
Well, cool deal, man. Well, yeah, man. Hey, I'm excited to get the show started.
I am too.
I'm excited to listen along to the interview that you had with Bradley and I'm excited to talk some sports. And then I'm even more excited because after that, we're both hopping in the truck and headed up to Uptown Charlotte. We're going to go watch the Hornets play Milwaukee.
And that is going to be a lot of fun, man.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am too, man. Let's do it.
I'm diddly D.
All right, guys, and we're back. Welcome to this week's Double Play Devo. And this week is yet another interview, but this time it is one of my really good friends. I've gotten to know him the last few years. He's a super cool guy, former all-conference, South Atlantic Conference, first baseman, DH, whatever you want to call it, because you kind of played a little bit of
DH
a couple different places.
I tell them about
first baseman, DH.
I was a primary hitter in college. So
primary hitter in college. Yeah. All right, but anyway. Please welcome our special guest for this one, Bradley Brown. What is going on, man?
What's going on, Cody? Thanks for having me on, dude. I'm excited. I'm pumped.
Oh, for sure, man. Same here. Absolutely. You know, and this is obviously something, you know, it's been in the works for a little bit, you know, but now we kind of found a convenient time for obviously both of our schedules to kind of take this time and, you know, kind of take the time and make this happen, you know, which is honestly kind of funny because this is something I'm going to say, you know, because I did an interview a few episodes ago with Llewellyn, but at the time of our Zoom call was a Monday night at 8 o'clock, and this one's a Monday morning at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, so I'm very different schedules.
I'm on both ends of the spectrum as far as like the schedules and everything. So I just,
you got to start setting stuff in concrete. You got to call the shots. That way we can adjust to your schedule.
No, man, it's all good, you know, because like the college semester for this year is just about over anyway, you know, so like I'm pretty much finished all my classes for this semester anyway. So now I don't really have that much like stuff I have to do. Yeah. So I can basically, you know, kind of do stuff whenever. So whenever I texted you the other day about when you wanted to do, and you were like 7 o'clock or 7:30, I'm like, okay, sure. Let's just, I'm like, yeah, this, okay, sure. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. That sounds
today
cool.
Today actually worked out perfect. I got invited to play in a golf tournament with my manager. So I actually don't have anything going on today. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun day, but playing in a golf tournament. And then I was like, I don't have to be there until like 8:45, 9. So I was like, this would be perfect.
Absolutely, so, man. For sure.
Yeah,
for sure, man.
I appreciate you having me on. I know it took a little bit to finally get it, like you said, get it going, but we finally got it locked in and we're doing it now. So
absolutely, man. You know, and this is just, you know, really cool for me, you know, because this is the first time, I guess, we've seen each other, technically, obviously not in person, you know, but like, you know, we can see each other's faces in a while. So it's definitely good to be able to catch up with you, man, for sure. Yep, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So I guess one of the first questions I wanted to ask you was just, what was life like, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, like obviously with like sports wise, with baseball and everything, or the sports in general, but like, you know, faith wise as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up, you know, we lived in a small town in Hamlet, North Carolina, about an hour east of Wingate. So it was really close to home. But, you know, I played a lot of sports growing up. Obviously, I did the rec league soccer, baseball, basketball, football, all everything. It took me until I was about probably 10 years old when I started playing travel ball with a bunch of my buddies that I figured out that baseball was going to be my sport. Ended up playing basketball my freshman year, and I was okay. Probably wasn't good enough to continue playing, which I'm glad I did. And I remember sitting in weightlifting class one day with the basketball coach, and he and I were really, you know, I respected him a lot, and he liked me a lot, I think. And I asked him, I was like, hey, man, you think I should try for basketball this year? And he's like, to be honest with you, man, I think if you want to play baseball in college, you need to just stick with that and focus on it. So took my advice there and kind of stuck with it. But yeah, grew up playing baseball. You know, I started playing travel ball with a group called the Richmond Rockies when I was 10. And to be 100% honest, I owe a lot of my baseball career credit, or my credit to baseball, to them, just because, you know, the coaches that we had really forces is a strong word, but they did in some ways, and to make us be close and gel as a group.
Right.
You know, that group of guys that I played with, I'm still best friends with a lot of those guys today.
That's cool.
You know, something crazy that we used to do when we were 12 or 13, you know, we played together from when we were 10 till probably right before our freshman year of high school, I think, is when we stopped playing together. So, I mean, that's 4 or 5 years, you know, that you play with somebody, and we got really close. So every year we would go down to this big, it was called the Triple Crown National Baseball Tournament down at Myrtle Beach. And there were like 100 teams in it. So we would always get a house and stay there. So we were really tight with, you know, our coach made us all stay together in one big beach house. So that was a lot of fun. But
oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah,
it was a That's lot really of fun. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I still remember a lot of the stuff we did, like we played wiffle ball in the front yard. I mean, it was a lot of fun. But
That's
yeah,
awesome.
So played with them for a while. Then, you know, worked my way up through high school, played baseball through high school, and showcased ball here in Charlotte. You know, from a general standpoint, that's really all it was, a sport was baseball. And I think you know me well enough to know I love the game a tremendous amount. So that's why I kind of stuck with it. I'm glad I did. Faith-wise, you know, grew up in church with my family. You know, I've always, you know, loved God, and I love the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made for us. And, you know, obviously we all are sinners. And I just, you know, always try to, you know, remember that he loves me for who I am. And, you know, it's kind of something my dad and my mother tried to teach me throughout that, you know, I always put him first, and that's what I did anytime, you know, I always tried to look to him, even, you know, not during just the good times, but the bad times as well, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we go through as, you know, people, we are people. And I think everybody has their moments in life where they're going through something. And, you know, even through those times, I always tried to, you know, bring light to his name and, you know, remember that he was there for me and, you know, help, pass his name on to other people. And that was one thing that I tried to do. You know, try to, you know, we had people on the team like Banks Wise. I don't know if you remember him, and Llewellyn the same way. Those guys were the kind of the same way. They wanted to spread his name and spread his love. So that's kind of how it was for me. I just, you know, everything that I did, I tried to do through him, you know, especially with baseball. I would always, you know, I always put I would pick a verse every year and put it in the bill of my cap. So, and anytime I was just struggling during a game, I would just kind of look at that and think like,
oh, that's cool.
Right, it's going to be okay. Like, this is a game. You're just doing it for, you know, you're doing it because you love it. So yeah, that's kind of what it was like for me faith wise as well.
Well, that's a pretty awesome story there, man, for sure. And it's like, that is pretty cool, obviously, you know, that you wrote the verse under your hat. I mean, obviously for encouragement, you know, for you, but it keeps things also like in you know, it keeps things in perspective, you know, like you said, you know, it's like, you know, because when it comes to sports, when it comes to sports in general, it can be obviously very easy to kind of put that above a lot of other stuff, obviously, because you're working on it like every day and you're participating. And obviously college sports is like a really big thing as well. So like that can, you know, very easily kind of overshadow a lot of other stuff, you know, so keeping that in perspective with your faith through the good and bad times, not only just with sports, but with life as well, kind of keeping that perspective in mind that, you know, hey, this is something I enjoy doing, but it's not, you know, this is something I enjoy doing, but shouldn't be the number one thing I'm constantly thinking of.
Absolutely.
In my life. So keeping that in perspective is really awesome.
And that's what I try to do, is always have perspective on that kind of stuff, you know, because there's a lot of people out there, and I try to think about this, there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, not able to do some of the stuff that I was able to do with baseball and sports, and, you know, how blessed and thankful I am that I was able to do that. And, you know, you sometimes when you take that stuff that seriously, and, you know, I think a lot of the guys that I played with that, you know, as well, they would agree that we all wanted to win more than anything. We did want to win. I mean, that's why we were playing. Love of the game, but winning is so much fun. I mean, you just like to win, especially when it's with a group of guys who your brothers with, and, you know, that can easily overshadow, you know, if you're not careful, that can easily become, you know, I guess overwhelming in some ways. You know, you let it take hold of you. And from there, I just try to keep perspective that, you know, win, lose, or draw, like, the sun's going to shine in the morning, and that, you know, he's always going to love me. And, you know, you got these teammates that that you've made as brothers. So I try to keep that stuff in perspective. And then you've got family at home that you got to think about too. So, you know, winning was fun, you know, but, you know, like you said, it put things in perspective for me.
Right. For sure. Absolutely, man. And it's like, you know, keeping that perspective is obviously very important, you know, just throughout life in general. And that's definitely really cool that you mentioned that, for sure. So I guess my next question to you is, this is something like I know you kind of already answered, you know, but you kind of already knew that, you know, baseball was your thing. But like, how did you know, like, this is really what I want to pursue, like for like past high school and everything?
Yeah. So when I started playing showcase ball, my freshman year, you know, I had a lot I needed to work on as an athlete. You know, I was never the fastest guy. And I think you and anybody else who ever watched a winging game will 100% agree and probably laugh at it. But I was never a fast guy. So I kind of got overlooked, I feel like. And I worked really hard for those 4 years, you know, really, really hard to, you know, improve and to, you know, improve my strengths, but also improve my weaknesses. Which were defense, you know, I actually came into Wingate as a catcher, but I only called one career game as a catcher. And, you know, I learned that I wasn't really, you know, we had guys like Micah and Llewellyn who were just defense. I mean, I consider those two guys like defensive wizards, you know, during my time. And a guy like Josh Clark, who I started with my freshman year, same thing. He was the captain behind the plate. So I kind of figured out that wasn't where I needed to be. So I worked on other aspects of the game throughout that, you know, I worked at third base, first base during high school, but, one thing, when I started playing showcase ball, my dad made a deal with me. You know, I don't remember exactly what the deal was, but it was something along the lines of like, you know, I don't even know what his end of the deal was. I just remember the end of the deal for me was like, if you earn a baseball scholarship. It wasn't, you know, but that was some kind of deal that he made with me a long time ago for something after college that he would help me with or something. And you know, that took hold of me, and I really wanted to, you know, make my dad proud, make my family proud, but also I wanted to do it for myself because there's, you know, like I said, I got overlooked a lot. And after I figured out that I, you know, wasn't all that great at basketball or and everything, you know, I figured baseball was my thing. And I loved the game too. So it was an easy decision to make too.
Right. For sure. You know, it's kind of like once you kind of figured out like, okay, this is what I'm really passionate about, and this is what I'm really like wanting to do, like to pursue. And obviously, like once you kind of find out where you can fit on the baseball field and kind of what you can bring to the table, not only like from the sport, you know, but just some other aspects of the game in general, you know, like leadership and things like that, of course, you know, and the reason why I bring that up is because I was there for your junior and senior years, you know, when I was volunteering with the team, and just your leadership ability with the team. It was like, to me watching it, it was very inspirational for me to watch you be the leader of that team, just because it was a lot of fun, because it didn't matter what the situation was, whether we were up by a lot or down by a lot in the game, you always had that really cool habit of just kind of rallying the team together, just inspiring the team together. And that just really had a really big impact on me. So that was really cool.
Yeah. And that's kind of always, that's something I always try to take into baseball. You know, baseball is a crazy game. And I think that the craziest, like we were just talking about before, you know, some of the stuff that I've watched that's happened to these guys over the past 2 years since our past how, oh, 4 years since I've been gone, or however long it's been.
He's like, oh no.
Yeah. I've been gone a lot longer than that, but no, I mean, just for instance, some of the stuff that's happened to them. I mean, baseball can chew you up and spit you out, man. And that's kind of like when I'm, you know, during a game or even practice, like if something, you know, were to go wrong, I mean, obviously stuff, you know, stuff happens. I mean, bad stuff happens during games. So you don't, I'm big on positive energy. I never believed in negative energy. So, you know, if I ever felt that, I would try to do my part to turn the table, you know, and at the end of the day, it was also on my teammates as well. But, you know, we had a lot of great leaders on those teams too, that I played with, you know, like guys like Micah and Hunter Morgan and, you know, Ty Andrus. I mean, you couldn't have, you know, especially my senior, you couldn't have picked a better group of guys to go into a game with.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody had that leadership ability. Everybody knew what their job was, and everybody was committed to doing their job to the best of their ability. And that it made me being a leader a lot easier, because I knew those guys had my back, and the same thing, I had their back as well. So that's kind of one thing that we all took into my senior year, especially, was we wanted to have a lot of positive energy, because, you know, obviously, you know, junior year was not our best season, and we kind of wiped the slate clean after that. And
right,
we said, this is a new year. We're going to turn the tables, and we are going to be positive no matter what the situation is. And we're going to really control what we can. And, you know, it paid dividends, because, you know, we had a really strong season. It didn't end up working out for us as far as a conference title goes, but, you know, we made it to a regional without even winning the conference tournament, which is a huge accomplishment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure.
I think that said a lot to our team, for us to be able to make that regional without even, you know, having a conference tournament title or a conference championship.
Right, for sure. And that was, you know, definitely something I thought was really cool. Like during your senior year, like you said, if we were able to make it all the way to the regionals, like obviously, despite what happened in the conference tournament, you know, with that walk-off we talked about, you know, like not during this, but, you know, before we got started with this interview, we were talking about that walk-off against Catawba and, you know, that whole thing, you know, but like, despite that, being able to come back and make the regionals, that was definitely really cool. And I'm like, plus, I think it's kind of funny that you brought up your junior year, because like, that's the year that we went like 19-31. I think that was the
really
record
bad.
That year.
Yeah, not a good season.
No, for sure. But like, I honestly felt bad after that year, because I'm like, you know, like, this is the first time since like Coach Gregory's been under Winged that he's had a losing season. So I felt like it was like my fault somehow. I'm like, oh man, like maybe I should just leave, just because like this is the first losing season y'all have had in forever. So I just need to go home. This is like the first under 500 season like ever. And I should just let me just get out of here. This is not going to end well.
we just had a tough season. That's all it was. And, you know, like I said, that's what we really took into perspective senior year. We just said, this was a tough season. We're going to forget about it, and we're going to move forward. We're going to, you know, handle what we can, and we're going to go win. And that was kind of the mindset we took.
Right, for sure. Absolutely. And of course, that definitely paid off with your senior year and even the year since. You know, the program's been really good, for sure.
Yep.
You know, which honestly kind of brings up my next question. So what was it like kind of playing for Winged and for Coach Gregory? And like, how did that even come to be, like getting you know, kind of explain a little bit about that.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll start from like the, I guess when I first got my offer from them, like I said, I was really overlooked in high school. You know, I always thought I was a good hitter, but you know, when I started playing showcase ball with some of these guys in Charlotte, I realized, all right, I got a lot of work to do. But you know, even still, you know, I still had good seasons in high school. You know, my high school team, we were actually really, really good. So Gregory, with it being a close draft, he came to watch me. And at the time, it was Coach Ryan Price and Eric Brown, who were the other assistant coaches and recruiting coordinators.
Right.
You know, and they recruited me and brought me on campus. And man, they made me feel like I was at home. I mean, and a lot of stuff has changed since that, you know, as far as on campus. And they made it, you know, it felt like home immediately as soon as I went there. And, you know, Coach Gregory and the other assistant coaches at the time presented me with the offer. And, you know, my dad looked at me and, you know, we got in the car after it was over and he said, Bradley, I'm just going to be honest with you. They want you bad. Like, they want you to come play here. And I think, and to me, that meant a lot because, like I said, a lot of people don't know this and some people do, but I only had one offer coming out of high school to play college baseball.
Oh, really?
That was all I had. That was the only offer that I had. And, had I waited a little bit longer, I may have had some more, but, you know, I was going into Tommy John surgery my junior year, going into senior year, and I didn't want Wingate to, you know, pull that offer because, you know, Gregory was up front and honest. He said, we want you to come here. We want you to play here, you know, but I do have, if you don't feel like this is where you want to be, I have other, you know, I have to keep our best interest in mind, which right, I completely understood. So, you know, with that being said, me going to Tommy John, I had a decision to make. I had to decide to take this offer from a team that really wanted me or wait around and see. You know, everybody has that dream of playing Division I baseball, obviously, but right. At the same time, you know, my dad put it into perspective with me. He said, Bradley, you know, if you go here, you have a chance to play from the minute you walk on campus. He said, you're going to have as much fun as you would at any other school. You're going to meet guys that you're going to have lifelong friendships with, and you have a chance to win a championship. So, you know, once I committed, I knew that I wanted to be there. And, you know, playing for Coach Gregory, like I said, I have a lot of respect for Coach Gregory, and I'll tell anybody this because he gave me an opportunity when nobody did, during high school. And he saw a lot in me. And, you know, I'll never forget my senior year of high school. I went and watched their opening day. And, I went down there and talked to him. He said, hey, you need to be ready to play when you get here. And he didn't, and, you know, he wasn't saying that as a, you know, trying to, like, you know, get me. He was saying that with all, right. And, you know, seriousness. He was like, you better be ready to play. And, when I got on campus, I think the old saying is, you know, you start out as a big fish in a little pond and then you get somewhere else, you're a little fish in a big pond. Right. And that's kind of what it was for me. Getting their freshman year, I was kind of like, they're, you know, looking at guys like Thomas Spitz, who got drafted, Shane Billings, who got drafted, Josh Clark, who was a great player. Michael Godinez, who was a shortstop. I mean, these guys were really good ball players as seniors, and we had a great senior class that year. And I'll never forget one inter-squad. I watched Josh Clark and Thomas Spitz hit back-to-back home runs. And I was catching at the time, and I looked at the umpire behind me. I said, I'm never going to play here. Like, there's no shot I'm ever going to play. And, I ended up having a decent fall. I mean, actually, I think decent's a strong word. I didn't have a great fall. And, I came back with a different mindset. The spring semester, I just said, hey, just go out there and, like, do what you can. Like, don't try to overdo anything. Like, you can hit, like, they can see that. I mean, they obviously wanted you to come here to hit. And I don't know what happened, man, but a light bulb went off in my head.
Yeah, apparently so.
Spring, and I just, you know, when we started inter-squad, I felt like I couldn't get out. And Coach Gregory gave me the opportunity to start, and I made the most of it, I would say. And I was very fortunate and blessed. And that's why with him, I'll always have the utmost respect for him. I mean, he is just, you know, he really invests in his players. He cares about his players. And, you know, and I respect him a lot too, because he's kind of the same way. Like, he's more about developing men after, you know, baseball's right. over, because, you know, making it to that, you know, that dream of playing in the big leagues, that's every college baseball player and high school baseball player's dream.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, in all reality, you know, the odds of that happening are slim. So he was big on, you know, creating men, and he put that in us that, you know, after this is over, you still have a life you have to live. And, Wingate University, I have a lot of, you know, gratitude for that place. I mean, it has a special place in my heart because I made friends there that'll be with me forever. I've made memories there that'll be with me forever. And, I got a great degree. I was able to get my master's, or start working on my master's. I even coached for a little bit, I'm sure you know, but
yes,
man, that place has a special place in my heart for sure. Met my fiance there too. That's important. So
yeah. Yes. I mean, well, like, I was honestly kind of wondering if you were going to mention that or not. I'm like,
oh no. Yeah. That's definitely,
I was like,
no, we got,
I was wondering if you were going to mention it, cause I was like, okay. Like, that you met her at Wingate. Well, yeah. Was I wrong?
You said that at the, you said baseball and Coach Gregory. So I had a, but no, yeah, I'm very grateful to have met her. We have she's my best friend. So, you know, that was just another cherry on top of everything. Cause I didn't meet her until junior year, but you know, all of that stuff collectively, made Wingate so special for me at the end.
Right. For sure. And I guess it paid off for you, because I got a little bit of your records on here. So in your 4 years at Wingate, you made the all conference team whether first team, second team, honorable mention, you made all conference all 4 years that you played. And in your freshman year, you were also conference freshman of the year in 2015. And you are one of only four players in South Atlantic Conference history to hit over 50 home runs and drive in over 200 RBIs. So
yeah,
so, I'd say that hitting kind of developed a little bit since your freshman year, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, when I'll never forget senior year, Ryan Brown texted me, I think. Ryan did amazing stuff when he was at Wingate. You know, can't say enough about that guy, but he texted me one day, or maybe shot me a direct message on Twitter, and he said, or he might have posted something, I can't remember, but I was sitting in computer class or some computer technology class, and he was like, you know, hey man, like, you're getting close to, like, you know, 50 home runs. And I was like, what? I had no idea that I was even relatively close to that number. So, but you know, when you're able to sit back and like reflect on all of that stuff, you know, I talk about this a lot with, you know, my parents and stuff. And I say, you know, the stats are, you know, those are awesome to see. Like, I was very fortunate to have a good career there. But like I said, I mean, the other stuff, you know, that holds a more important spot for me. But I mean, yeah, I was very fortunate to have I felt like it was a great career at Wingate, baseball. So, yeah, very, very lucky and very blessed.
For sure, man. Absolutely. And just like you said, kind of keeping that in perspective, despite all the success, because you definitely had a lot of success over there. And, you know, like you said, that's really cool, man, for sure.
Yeah.
So I guess with that being said, like, how did you not only grow as a person at Wingate, but grow in your faith and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Obviously, as well as your baseball career, which we just talked about, but like, how did you kind of grow as a person and in your faith during your time at Wingate?
Yeah. So, I will say throughout the 4 years, like I said early on in the show, like, you know, as human beings, we go through some, you know, what I like to call trial and error and trials and tribulations as well.
Yes.
And I was one of those people, you know, when you move away from home and you leave your friends and you leave your family and you kind of leave everything that you've done for 18 years, even though you're only an hour away, it's a lot that's thrown on you. And you're kind of, that's where you kind of become a man. And my, you know, that's where I figured out, all right, you're a man now, you got to take that next step. And it was a big change for me, you know. So for me, you know, there were times where I got into some, you know, tough places. I just didn't know, you know, like I said, looking back, Wingate was always home, you know, and I knew it from the start, but, you know, obviously there were times where I kind of felt like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this, a lot of stuff going on. I remember one year, I just was really, I don't know, you know, it was a lot, there was something, something with baseball. I had my, you know, my third elbow surgery and I junior year early on, and I wasn't able to practice in the fall.
Right.
And it was just getting really frustrating because, you know, that time as a 21 year old, you've already had three elbow surgeries. That's tough. And I just kind of was like hurting all the time. I was sore all the time. I was having to go through rehab for a third time. And it just kind of became all at once. And I was just like, you know, man, do I want to continue doing this? Do I want to keep playing and risking my body? You know, if I'm not able to, you know, I thought about all kinds of stuff. And one day I was just kind of like, I may want to go home. Yeah. I don't know if I want to keep doing this. You know, my arm's hurting. I can't throw. I don't feel healthy right now. And I remember going home one night just to go see my family. It's only an hour drive. And I just like, down to the dumps. And so, you know, I think I grew a lot that day because I remember I went and met with my pastor at the time and just talked with him and, you know, told him that I just didn't feel happy. And, you know, this is kind of where I learned the most about, you know, in my, you know, having trust in my faith and in Jesus and God, you know, even during the dark times, you know, it's easy to praise them when everything's going well.
Right.
You know, who do you turn to when that stuff is not going, things aren't going well? And that's where I learned that. And ever since then, I've kind of kept that mindset. Like, you know, things are, you know, you can't have, I was listening to a sermon the other day, you can't have flowers without sunshine, but you can't have flowers without a little bit of rain as well. And, you know, that's kind of the way I look at things now is, you know, you're going to go through these dark times and you're going to go through these, you know, these tough roads. And that made me grow a lot. And I think that throughout that process of playing baseball and being at Wingate, that without that, those rainy days, that I wouldn't have developed my faith that way. But, you know, I really grew as a man there. And I think, you know, that for me, made me take another step in my faith as well. So,
I mean, like, wow. I mean, like, I don't really have much to say about that. I mean, like, other than that's just really cool, man, for sure. You know, because there's obviously like a lot of times where we're going through it, running high, things are going great. We're feeling good about our situations, about, you know, feeling great about our situations, our opportunities that, you know, that we're having and things like that, you know, and then it just seems like life can sometimes just hit you, seems from every direction all at once. And, you know, and like, I'm speaking from experience, obviously, like, not the exact same stuff that you were probably right. feeling, but like just that feeling of everything just feeling all piled up on you.
That overwhelming feeling.
Oh, right. For sure. You know, it just feels overwhelming and it just feels like kind of wondering what you're supposed to do about it, because you don't want to like obviously sit there and do nothing because, you know, you don't feel like you're doing anything about it. But then at the same time, if you want to do something about it, it feels like there's so much weight you got to push off yourself mm-hmm. just to gain an extra little step. You know, you feel like the effort's not worth it. You know, and that's obviously really cool, just to kind of like we were just talking about, man, you know, just kind of keeping things in perspective. And, you know, like what you said, like what your pastor told you, that's one of those statements that can be like written like on a, you know, like on a picture or something. You know, it's like you can't have flowers without sunshine, but you can't have flowers without rain either. You know, it's like in order to get the big prize in life and in order to grow your faith in Christ as well, you kind of have to go through the good and the bad, because it keeps things in perspective and it makes you turn to what's important and to,
exactly.
you know, it makes you turn to your faith and what's important in life. So just you being able to tell that story, man, is really cool. And that's really cool how you've used that to tell other people about that. Cause obviously everybody goes through different things as far as what it is, but everyone has the same feelings of feeling overwhelmed and just feeling like, you know, just having hard times in their life. So you've been being able to share, that's pretty awesome, man, for sure.
Absolutely.
And that's really cool how that kind of grew and developed through your time in college. And even now, obviously, even after you've graduated and gotten a job and all that kind of stuff too, mm-hmm. which kind of leads me to my next point. So what are you doing now? College, after graduating, what are you doing now?
Yeah, so I just finished my MBA back in December. I started out at Wingate, and then I got a job with Liberty Mutual. So I'm selling insurance for them.
Nice.
And
Liberty,
then,
Liberty?
Yep, that one. That's that and the emu is how everybody knows this. I get it all the time. So
yeah.
But yeah, I graduated. You know, I went to coaching for a little bit at Wingate, and then, you know, financially, unfortunately, it wasn't the right situation for me. And again, something I have a lot of respect for Coach Gregor. He gracefully handled that situation with me having to go another route.
Right.
He could have handled that a lot differently, but he was super graceful with it, which I'm thankful for, because I was in a, you know, a tough spot with figuring out what I needed to do. But, you know, from there, I got the job, was doing my MBA. And, you know, fortunately enough, again, I'm blessed to have had success with Liberty. I love what I do. I can't say enough about, you know, it can be a headache, which the way I look at it is all jobs are going to have some sort of headache.
Oh yeah.
This one does, but you know, at the same time, I'm very thankful for the opportunity that I was given. And anyways, but I transferred out of Wingate, went to Gardner-Webb. So I finished my MBA back in December, and I've been with Liberty Mutual since very beginning of 2019. And, you know, I hope to stay with them for a long time. That's kind of my goal. And then hopefully one day when I'm ready to retire from Liberty, I can, you know, I've told Victoria that I do want to eventually, and my parents as well, that I do eventually want to go back into coaching baseball. I don't know where. I would like to coach at the college level again, but that's kind of what I'm hoping to do. I don't, you know, at that point of retirement, I'm hoping it'll be like a volunteer thing where I can just, you know, mosey around and, you know, help out when I can. But I do have that, you know, goal in mind as well. So
that would definitely be pretty cool to get back in the realm of coaching again, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, because like what I was talking about, leadership and just what you could bring to the table, I can see you bringing a lot of stuff to the table as far as coaching is concerned. So that's pretty cool, man, to still have that thought in mind and keep that thought around, because I'm sure like some opportunity is going to come up, I'm sure, at some point.
I hope so.
Yeah, man, for sure. I mean, but like that is pretty cool though, that you're working with Liberty and have been for the last couple of years or so now. I'm really glad you're able to find like a really solid position that you're really enjoying, because like mm-hmm. that's one of the big things I hear, you know, that you just hear from people, not just college athletes, you know, but just people who go to college, is like, you know, they go to school and they have a hard time finding a job and a major and stuff like that, you know. But like that's really cool that you were able to, one, go to college and play really well with baseball, but two, you know, get a really solid degree, get a master's degree as well, and just, you know, and it seems like, well, like you said, it seems like you're really having a lot of fun with your job. You're really enjoying it. So that's
I love
really
it.
Really cool, so man.
I can't say enough about it. But yeah, I'm very fortunate to be in the position I am. You know, like you said, was able to go to college, have success there, fortunately enough, and, you know, kind of doing the same here. So it's nice for sure.
Well, that's pretty awesome, man, for sure. Well, I think that's about all the questions I got, except one more. Mm-hmm. As you can see, okay, well, not as you can see, because this is a podcast, but for our listeners that can't see us in the Zoom call right now, I'm wearing my usual Boston Red Sox hat, because if you're a relatively consistent listener on the Reverent Babble podcast, especially as of recently, you know, with the Major League Baseball starting back up, we've been talking a lot about baseball, you know, during our sports segment of the show, The Weekly Score, which you can listen to after this portion of the show is over, by the way. So please stay with us and check that out. That was a little bit of a shameless plug there. But anyway, so I got my Boston Red Sox hat on. And I know that during your time at Wingate, during your last 2 years, I was able to, you know, ask you about baseball. And I probably came across as a little bit of annoying because I didn't know how to, you know, like I probably came across as like socially awkward because I'm just like this random 14-year-old. This is there on the field, talking to a bunch of college players are probably thinking like, man, what is this kid doing over here? But anyway, you know, but one of the questions I remember asking you when I was down there is, what was your favorite baseball team? And I know that you mentioned the Boston Red Sox. So are they your favorite team?
They are. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. For sure. I was checking.
They are definitely my favorite. Yeah. You know,
I was checking just to be sure that was still, that's still the case, man. But hey, that's pretty awesome, man. You know, and like, I remember you telling me a story. You got to see a playoff game and you got to see JD Drew.
Yeah. So that was actually my dad. I was not able to go to that game. So
really
2008 ALCS, my dad was working with the company he's still working for now. I'm just at a different location, and a guy there had bid for a raffle for tickets, two tickets to that game. And my dad told me, the guy came into his office, he said, I'm bidding on this raffle, we're gonna win and we're gonna go watch this game. And my dad obviously kind of blew it off. He was like, yeah, whatever, like, you're not winning this raffle. Well, guess what, he won the raffle.
Yeah.
So they packed up the car and they drove all the way to Massachusetts from North Carolina, drove overnight, and the other guy had family up there, so he got to go to the game. And he got home like 2 days later after the game, and you know, I watched the game. It was the game where JD Drew hit the walk-off double, and I think it was 07, because 08 we won the World Series.
Yes.
07 was the year the Rays went to the World Series and lost to
Phillies.
I think it was the Phillies.
That's when they had Ryan Howard and all those
Ryan Howard
on there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, apparently they, you know, Massachusetts, that's diehard Red Sox area. I mean, you're right in the heart of Red Sox home. So this is the funniest story, I think, because my dad said that they were sitting in center field and the Red Sox were down big this game. And, the guy looked at my dad. It was like the seventh inning. You know, they're playing Sweet Caroline. The fans are like still in it. My dad's like, man, they're down by a lot. They're not coming back from this, you know. And he said that the guy looked at him and was like, hey, you ready to leave? We need to beat the crowd to get home. And so they got up and started walking out. And he said that the Red Sox faithful let him have it.
I bet.
They were giving it to him every way that they could. And he said they got out of the stadium after about getting, you know, eaten alive. And,
yeah.
they got out of the stadium and they're walking down the road. And about 20 minutes later, or sometime after, you can still hear the stadium.
Right.
And he said that you just heard this loud roar of the fans.
Oh, no.
And they're like looking at each other, trying to figure out like what in the world is going on. And they start play. I guess maybe they had their phones. I don't know if they had iPhones or anything then, but, you know, whatever. But they somehow saw the score of the game, and JD Drew had hit the walk-off double.
Oh, wow.
And some random woman in the street stopped him, I think, and was like, did you guys see that? Like, were you guys at the game? Why are you standing right here right now? And, like, they were just, like, in awe. They couldn't believe what they had done. Like, hearing my dad tell the story, it was really funny, because I thought the funniest part was the Red Sox faithful just giving it to him. Because I know if I was there and if I'd have been at that game, we weren't leaving. You know, I love watching, you know, those kind of games, because anything can happen. So.
Oh, yeah, of course. Wow. That's a pretty funny story for sure. Yeah, it's a pretty cool story. But like, just with that kind of thought in mind about the Red Sox, obviously we just said that the Red Sox are your favorite team. So like, who's your favorite Red Sox player? It doesn't have to be current. It can be all time, current, whatever.
So the way I became a Red Sox fan, my mom is actually best friend, or was, you know, in high school, she was best friends with Trot Nixon's wife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's how I became a Red Sox fan. I actually grew up a Braves fan until I was about 5 years old. I was a huge Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, all those guys. I was a huge fan of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And then we found out about Trot, and Catherine is his wife's name. And, you know, mom was like, hey, Trot, you know, because Catherine's from my hometown. And she was like, Trot's coming to one of the car dealerships to sign autographs. And so we went and met him. And, you know, after that, you know, mom and Catherine started kind of picking back up with their friendship a little bit. And we ended up getting to see Trot. And it was after he won the World Series. And he gave me some really cool stuff, man. Trot's a, he probably wouldn't remember me now, but he's a great guy. I haven't seen him in years. But he gave me some really cool pictures from the ALDS when they were playing the A's, where he had signed it for me.
That's cool.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to think where I was going with that. I had a thought in mind and then I lost
it. Oh, no.
But anyway, so in it, but after that, we kind of, you know, became closer with him. And so we would, my dad would take us to Baltimore Orioles games through his company at some kind of discount or something. And,
oh, that's cool.
Trot, when they would play in Baltimore, he would get us kind of like in the locker room area, not in the actual locker room, but we would always go see him and he would, you know, come down there and talk to us. And I got through that. I got to meet like Jason Baratek, Curt Schilling.
Oh, wow.
I got to meet some really cool players, man. It was awesome. Tony Graffinino, just some random guys. And one day in the harbor in Baltimore, I met Mike Timlin and nobody knew who he was. You know, Mike Timlin was at that time, you know, kind of a mediocre reliever. I thought he was always really good, but he had his World Series ring on and he actually let me hold his World Series ring. And it felt like it was really cool. I mean,
that's cool.
He was really cool about it. You know, people with their families don't, you know, players like that, you know, they get stunned by the media and stuff all the time. So he was kind of, I was like, hey, like my dad was like, hey, you Mike Timlin? He's like, yeah, I'm with my family right now, but you know, I'll take a picture with you. And my dad was like, oh, that would be amazing. We just wanted to say, hey,
yeah.
He was like, yeah, you want to try this on? Or he was like, you want to hold this? And it was his ring. And I was like, I think I
yeah,
was
like 12, what?
I was somewhere in the range of 8 to 12 years old at the time, but it was a really cool story. And I still got the picture at my house. So
that's cool, man. That's awesome. Yeah. And what's honestly kind of funny is, you know, and this is kind of a quick side story, then we'll kind of get back to it. Mm-hmm. But like my first year I was with the team, and I remember it was like, I think it was like the last day of fall practice, mm-hmm. or one of the last fall practices. And I remember like half the team was like bringing over like Red mm-hmm. Sox stuff. And I remember you, was it you that brought me that signed Trot Nixon jersey?
Yeah, that was probably.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, I thought that was you that brought me that signed Trot Nixon jersey. Like, I still have it. I still have it in my closet in there.
It was a white, or I had a white and a red one. So you might've gotten either one of those. I don't remember which one I had.
I think it was the white one.
Yeah.
I think it was the white one with the red lettering on it. Cause his number 7 on the mat was autographed. And I thought that was, you know, and like, obviously it's just like, my mind was like just completely like blown that day.
Yeah.
Of course, just from like having that experience for sure, you know. But what was funny too is I remember the first day, the first fall practice I ever went to with y'all, and I remember coach was like yelling at me to come on the field. He was like, come on the field, what are you doing up there, and all that kind of stuff. And of course, like, I'm, you know what, and of course I'm 14 and I'm getting to hang around with a bunch of college players and stuff, you know. And of course, you know, like, my mind's blown, you know, like, my eyes were probably like wide open like this. Like, you can see it on the Zoom call, like, the whole time. My mind was just blown. So that was really cool. But I remember you and I think it was Reese Daniel brought me up a signed bat. Like, half the team had gave me like an old hickory wooden bat.
Yeah.
And y'all signed that. And it was like half the team signed that. And I thought that was really cool. But there's also one more thing I want to show you. Like I said, unfortunately, you can't see this, listeners, because this is a podcast, but I did find this. I'm not find it, I still have it around, but you know, I had to kind of dig for it a little bit. But I still got your old backup glove that you gave me for practice, because I remember, because I didn't have like a good glove for like shagging during BP, and I remember you gave me this after like the first when I gave me to, like, you let me borrow it, and then for some reason, you know, because I'm 14, I can't remember to bring anything, so every time I couldn't, you know, so like I didn't bring my glove every time. So I remember for like 2 or 3 practices you let me use this glove, and I remember after about like the 3rd or 4th practice you said, I'll just keep it.
I actually gave that to one of my teammates, and then he ended up not playing anymore, and so I had it sitting in my locker. That was from high school when I used to pitch, and I was like, I don't, you know, this would be good for Cody. I mean, he needs a glove. I don't use this, so this would be perfect. So
that's awesome.
So, but that was Old Faithful. She did well. So
absolutely, man, for sure. I mean, like, I remember using this glove for like every practice for like the next 2 or 3 years after. I mean, like, I used this glove as much as I could up until I just like couldn't use it anymore, because I haven't had it like conditioned or anything yet, you know, because it became like so slick on the inside, you know, because it wasn't, you know, because all of the leather hadn't been like coated and everything in so long, the ball, like I would catch it and then it would just like slide out the top of the glove. And I'm like, okay, I think I need to just to put this glove to rest, at least for now. And then I'll, and then I changed gloves. And I think my third year, which I think it was the year after you graduated, I think I started using a different glove. But I remember I used that glove for like every practice for like the next 2+ years I was there. So that was definitely really cool. And and like that was one of the things I saw this morning. I was like, oh man, I gotta grab this and show it to him.
I appreciate you doing that, man.
Oh yeah, man, absolutely.
I'm glad you still have it. That was pretty cool. So
absolutely, man, for sure. You know, and like that was a definitely an experience I'll never forget, for sure. And that was definitely a lot of fun, for sure. Absolutely.
Awesome.
But kind of getting back to the Red Sox deal, so that was definitely a really cool story about, you know, walk-off and J.D. Drew and getting to meet Trot Nixon and a lot of the other Red Sox players. That's really awesome, man, for sure. So, like, do you have, like, a favorite Red Sox player of all time? I guess.
Oh, yeah, it's Trot, definitely.
Trot Nixon,
definitely Trot. Yeah, because, definitely Trot. I loved watching him play. He was kind of the mentality that I tried to take into every game. He was nicknamed the Dirt Dog, which I loved because he was just a hard-nosed player. And it was kind of the mentality that I tried to play – that I tried to have as well. So
that's awesome.
You know, he's definitely my favorite, definitely.
That's pretty awesome, man, for sure. And, like, this is just a question out of curiosity. Like, I know this – here's Red Sox teams, like basically a brand new team, like that World Series core from 2018, a lot of it's gone now, but like, do you have any like favorite players on the current team? Do you like, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, I obviously like Xander Bogaerts. I mean,
he's
the leader of the team. But I mean, the guy that I hope and I think will have a great career, there's two of them. I think Verdugo will have a great career.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of talent, but I also like Bobby Dalbec. So
yeah, I like Bobby Dalbec too.
I think that both of those guys, they're really young. I think they've got a long and successful career ahead of them. So I'm excited to watch those guys play.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like they would definitely really be a pretty big part of that like new core of players that'll kind of be with the team for a long time. Him and Verdugo, and like you said, and you know, and a couple other the younger players. I really hope, you know, that'll be kind of part of the main core of the team for years to come. But that's pretty awesome, man, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess that's going to do it for this week's Double Play Devo special edition with Bradley Brown. Thank you so much, man, for taking the time to do this interview with me, man. Like I said, man, I know we've been working on this for the last little bit, but I'm definitely glad we were able to do it now.
Yeah, thank you for bringing me on, man. I enjoyed it. It was nice to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll get to see each other in person soon. So,
absolutely, man, for sure. We're going to definitely have to schedule a time to go out to eat lunch or something here in the near future, for sure.
That sounds good, man. Yeah, and tell your dad and family I said hello. And
absolutely.
You guys know if you need anything at all to give me a call or shoot me a text, and I'll help you every way I can.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That sounds good.
All right, it is sports time. Yeah, I just checked my clock. Oh, well, my watch. I don't have a clock. I was about to say, wait, what? My Apple Watch. Cody, you got an Apple Watch too?
Yes, I do.
We're cool dudes, man.
Yeah, man.
That just made us less cool. But yeah, by the way, that's less cool because we're getting back on topic. It is, in fact, sports time. Time to update y'all on the week that was in the world of sports. This is
the weekly score. Hey, there we go.
There we go. Good job. Hey, I got to say something.
Okay.
Because I received a formal complaint last night, actually,
about
our podcast. My buddy Dalton Ricker from down in Southport.
Okay.
He is a TSA agent at Wilmington Airport. So he listens to our podcast, you know, driving to work, driving back. So Dalton, appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
But he said that he has finally caught up with all the episodes. There was a few weeks where he, you know, got behind.
That's good.
And he said that he has caught up to past, I think, either all the way or March 11th. So he's still getting there.
Yeah.
But he has not heard anything about hockey yet. So Dalton, this is for you. Congratulations to the Carolina Hurricanes on clinching a spot in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes, exactly, man, for sure. That's pretty awesome for them.
I can tell you that they have Sebastian Aho and one of the Stahl brothers, and it's not Eric Stahl because that's the last one I remember. It's the other one. Can't tell you what his first name is. But I'm excited to watch them, you know, when I remember that they're on. And just, well, to be quite honest, Cody, I don't know the sport well enough to have takes on it. I just really don't.
Well, to be honest, Neil, I don't really know that much about the sport hockey either. I mean, because I guess here's my thing about hockey. It's really cool to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I like to watch hockey. I just don't know what's going on.
Right.
On the ice.
And I don't think about it till it's Stanley Cup playoff time.
Right.
You know? So I will admit that, you know, I'm not a fair weather fan in a lot of things. I am one with Hurricanes hockey just because – yeah, I don't. And they do fine up in Raleigh, but I think if they were in Charlotte, I would probably pay more attention to them. Honestly,
probably so.
But
yeah.
I just kind of forget about them because they're, you know, they're up in the, our great state's capital, you know,
of Raleigh.
But yeah, there's your hockey segment, Dalton. Go Canes. Do the little siren thing, you know, that meme of Luke Kuechly acting like he was the cheese grater at Olive Garden. And yeah, hopefully they'll make a deep run. I'm definitely gonna be watching. But
oh yeah, same here for sure.
Dalton, you wanted hockey talk? There you go.
There you go, man. There it is.
But now we're gonna officially start the segment. We're gonna hit the ground running.
This is officially official.
This is officially official. So today, Cody.
Okay.
It's draft day.
Yes, it's draft day.
It is time for this NFL draft.
NFL draft.
I feel like it should have happened about 3 weeks ago. I feel like, you know, it's just been hyped up forever and ever and ever. And no, I'm not about to sing Randy Travis a song. But
and ever.
It's here. It's finally here. And we are going to go over what we think are the top 10 picks that are going to happen.
All right.
So we're not going to bore people to death and go through the first 32 picks because I don't know past 10, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, same here.
I don't really know how you know past 3 or 4 in this year's draft,
quite
honest, either.
That's for sure.
But let's talk about it, Cody. So I'm going to just name the teams that are in the top 10, okay?
Okay.
We got the Jacksonville Jaguars. We got the New York Jets. We got San Francisco. We got Atlanta Falcons, Cincinnati Bengals, Denver Broncos, Detroit Lions, Carolina Panthers, Miami Dolphins, and the Dallas Cowboys. So that's who are the top 10 teams drafting in the draft this year. And y'all heard my mix-up. It wasn't until recently that Denver and Miami swapped picks.
Yes.
So where Miami was going to pick 6 and Denver 9th, they swapped that. So it's opposite of that now.
Yes.
Which completely can shake up how this draft order goes down. Cody, I think we can say our first three together and not need much discussion.
No, not really.
But it's at number 4 where it'll kind of start some discussion.
Yeah.
Okay. But on a count of 3, for each of the top 3, we'll just say it together.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we saying first name and last name?
First name and last name. We're good with that?
Okay, yeah.
All right. So, with the first pick in the NFL draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select
Trevor Lawrence
from Clemson. Duh.
Yeah. Okay. I was about to say, that's obvious.
With the second pick, the New York Jets select
Zach Wilson
from BYU. Duh. That's going to happen too, especially with them not having Darnold anymore, right? Darnold came to the Panthers. This is one that me and you were agreeing on.
Yes. And I was about to say that this is a pick that me and you agreed on, but the general public may not.
Or more and more people seem like this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm just going with the flow of, like, this is just a cookie cutter thing that would fit right in. Okay.
Yeah. To be honest, that's kind of the reason why I chose this.
So with the third pick, San Francisco selects Mac Jones from Alabama. You know, I don't think he needs to go number 3.
I'm completely honest with you. I would honestly pick Fields or Trey Lance before him.
Absolutely.
I would pick Justin Fields or Trey Lance before him. But it just seems that Mac Jones has been trending in that direction, at least like in the eyes of the media recently. Mac Jones has definitely been trending towards the 49ers.
And Kyle Shanahan's doing a terrible job with his poker face.
Because
people ask him about, like, Trey Lance and all that. And somebody asked – somebody, did you see the video somebody said is Jimmy G going to be on the roster by this Sunday? He said, I can't guarantee anybody on this earth is going to be alive by this Sunday. So, no, I can't guarantee anybody.
Well,
what the heck's that mean, Kyle?
That was, like, my first question I saw. And I'm like, okay, well, no one's going to be alive or guaranteed to be alive within the next 2 seconds. So, why are we talking about it on Sunday?
Whatever.
I mean, but, like, still, that was, like, just such a random answer.
Yeah.
Okay, you could have just said no comment and moved on.
But he's doing a terrible job of realizing that, you know, his views, and from what I've heard from, like, some ESPN stuff and whatnot and other sports podcasts, that Shanahan wants Jones and the front office wants Trey Lance. So we're going to see who really has the power in picking on draft night when the third pick comes around. I think it's going to be Mac Jones.
Yeah,
and I mean this with the utmost respect with my Tar Heel roots. I think this is another Mitch Trubisky situation.
To be honest, Neil, I completely agree, and that's why I had Lance or that's why I would want, excuse me, I don't have him because I obviously have Jones at three. But that's why I would rather have Justin Fields or Trey Lance above Mac Jones, because this to me looks like a Mitch Trubisky situation.
Yeah.
He had one really great year where they won the national championship. He was the third string his first year to Jalen Hurts and Tua.
Right.
And, you know, this past season was obviously his first chance to really have a breakout, which he did. I mean, obviously they won a national championship.
Right.
But I don't see that as enough substance to warrant the number three overall pick.
Yeah, I don't know, man. And with it being the year where there's no combine and it's just these pro days,
yeah,
it's really easy to look better on your pro day than the combine because you're absolutely in a familiar facility. You know, there's even some rumors and speculations that some of these places have their 40-yard dash is like 38 and a half yards to make them a little bit quicker, you know, just have a little advantage. But who knows, man. But I am leaning towards the direction, just like you are, that Mac Jones is going to be the third quarterback picked
exactly
in this draft.
Same here.
Which is just
mind-blowing to me.
If you would have told me that at the beginning of last season, that Mac Jones would be picked over Fields and Trey Lance, I'd called you crazy.
Yeah.
But the fact that this is just looks like it's coming closer and closer to actually being a reality is blowing my mind.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so that's about the last one that me and you agree on.
Yep, pretty much.
Okay, we have some other ones deeper down, but this is one that's I don't want to see happen, but I think it's going to happen.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to let you say yours first, and then I'll say mine.
Okay? All right, that's fine.
All right, so with the fourth pick, the Falcons will pick
Ja'Marr Chase from LSU.
Okay.
And I understand your pick, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is Julio Jones has been in trade talks for the last couple years, obviously, but recently he's been talked about even more about possibly being traded. It would only make sense that if the Falcons are trading or looking to trade Julio Jones, that they would draft a receiver to try to take his place. And I think that Ja'Marr Chase, I know that obviously last season he didn't play, but I just think that, one, his talent is just a little bit peaker of Devontae Smith. I know Devontae Smith won the Heisman, and trust me, he's going to be picked here in just a minute. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't worry about him. But as far as the team needs go, and as far as just the talking about Julio Jones being possibly traded, it would make sense to me that if the Falcons are really serious about getting rid of Julio, that they would try to draft his replacement in Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, like with your point. I do see potentially them trying to do that in free agency next year. If they get a trade done,
because, yeah.
I mean, who knows with the Falcons, by the way. It is the Falcons, right?
That is true.
But you bring up fair points. But I think in this situation, this is almost a best available athlete.
Best players available situation.
Best player available, which some people even think that they might go quarterback. Like, they might pick Lance. I don't think so.
No way.
I don't think.
Well, the reason why I do not think they would is because Matt Ryan's contract doesn't expire until 2023.
Yeah.
And there's no way that contract's going to be able to get traded. And there's no point in drafting a quarterback number four overall who's going to be sitting on your bench for 3 years.
No, there's no point in drafting the Trey Lance to sit on the bench, okay?
I was about to say, like, the last thing the Falcons need is a Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers situation.
Yeah.
That's the last thing the Falcons
or
need.
Or Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love situation.
Yes, exactly.
That easily got forgotten about, right?
Exactly, for sure.
But yeah, I'm going with Kyle Pitts.
You're going with Kyle Pitts?
Yes.
Tight end from Florida.
Who is an
Which
absolute,
makes perfect sense to
who's,
me.
Who's an absolute beast.
He is a beast.
Dude is amazing. I wish he would be at number eight, but I don't see it happening.
I would be surprised if he lasts till eight. And I'm not saying the Panthers would get him. I'm just saying if he does fall to eight, that would be a miracle. But if you ask me, I just see them choosing a receiver over a tight end, but it would not shock me at all if Kyle Pitts is drafted.
Yeah, I think they want to add to their repertoire and give it one more go with Julio and Matt Ryan and the rest of the guys on that team and see if
Kyle
Pitts
is. But I guess my point
is
they've had other chances.
Oh,
to
I
do
know.
It. Yeah.
I know, but trust me, when in doubt, just remember it's the Atlanta Falcons. Okay,
that's true.
So as long as Arthur Blank's in ownership, which he will be for, you know,
a long time.
A very long time. I think he's going to give them as many chances as he can before he goes full-on rebuild. And I think in the next 3 or 4 years, you won't recognize the Falcons at all. I think that's going to be a completely different team because, you know, you got a new coach, new schemes, all that stuff.
Right.
So my mouth's starting to taste bad talking about the Falcons so much. Let's move on. All right, so now, number five, the Bengals. Cody, who who do you think Cincinnati is going to pick at the five spot?
I got them drafting Penei Sewell from Oregon.
Oh, wow.
I got them drafting Penei Sewell.
That early, huh?
That early, yes. Because the Bengals need to do anything they can to try to protect Joe Burrow. I know Joe Burrow had a shortened season, but a big part of that was because basically every team they played kept getting so much pressure on him.
Yeah. And welcome to the NFL.
And welcome to the NFL. And trust me, I understand that. But obviously, with the Bengals not being a good team in general last year, you know, obviously the year before, you know, because they got number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. But obviously, even since then, you know, drafting a quarterback is not going to automatically change your team. And I understand that there's a case you could draft a receiver for him to throw to, and that makes perfect sense too. I just think that drafting a guy like Penei Sewell to help kind of build the young core of the offensive line, kind of just put one building block in place for the offensive line, like, because if that happens, you don't got to worry about signing a bunch of offensive linemen in free agency, because that's the last thing teams want to do is sign a bunch of offensive linemen instead of, like, teams don't want to sign offensive linemen. They want to sign skill position players. So having a guy like Penei Sewell already as one of your core foundations of your offensive line is, one, going to help solidify that much more, but two, it's going to help protect Joe Burrow, and maybe he'll have a less likely chance of getting as much pressure on him as he did in his limited action last year.
Okay. I'm going with Ja'Marr Chase.
You're going with Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, so I believe they're going to immediately try to replace what was A.J. Green's spot.
Yes.
Because, you know, A.J. Green's on the Cardinals now. It's been kind of off years, the past 3 or 4 years anyway.
Right.
Kind of was a big fish in a small pond in Cincinnati. You know? And I think they're going to go right away and get Joe Burrow a weapon in the first round. Doesn't mean they won't go OL second,
in
third.
Second round,
okay.
Right.
I do think they will get at least one offensive lineman because to your exact points. I just don't think they go this early.
Well, the only reason why I feel that like this is because after Penei Sewell, it's a little bit of a drop off as far as major offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You know, whereas the receivers, I'm not saying that there's not a drop off in receivers. Obviously, there is, because the lower you get, you're just not going to get as quality players. But I just see that there's more options at wide receiver even later on than there is, like, really great O linemen.
Right. You know, yeah, so, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
I think they would rather develop a second or third rounder OL.
Right.
And not pass up on specialists that will. I think the specialists, when it comes to, you know, running backs, wide receivers, I think that talent group falls off quicker than the offensive line group does in this draft. So that's why I'm going with Ja'Marr Chase to Bengals. Now we've come back to one that we agree on.
Yes. Okay.
So now the number six pick is now Denver's with that trade with Miami.
Yes.
So with the sixth pick, we'll say at the same time, okay, the Denver Broncos select
Trey Lance
from North Dakota State.
Yes.
Yeah, the Bison. And I'll give you the reason why. I got two reasons why.
Okay.
One, because their quarterback right now is Drew Locke. Okay?
Yeah, that's true.
And he's had plenty of time. He's had plenty of chances. Okay?
Yes.
Second one, he's tall. You know who likes tall quarterbacks? John Elway.
Yes.
So
he likes tall quarterbacks.
It's like, okay, why John Elway's making the pros and cons list of Trey Lance? Pros, he's tall.
He's done. Pick him, draft him, do whatever.
We're good.
I mean, like, there was obviously talk of Denver obviously trying to get a quarterback in the first place. You were wondering if it was going to maybe possibly be a trade with Teddy Bridgewater or some other free agent signing. But I think with Denver trading up with Miami, I think that almost guarantees they're going to draft a quarterback. And I think Trey Lance is going to definitely be a great fit for Denver.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, now, seventh pick, Detroit Lions.
Okay.
We know they don't need a quarterback. They got Jared Goff.
No.
Right? So
they
need to let that develop first. So neither me or you one did not say they're going quarterback. I'm going to go first this time.
Okay, go ahead.
And I'll hand it off to you. I think with the seventh pick, the Lions are going to pick Devontae Smith from Alabama.
Okay.
You know how you compliment your brand new quarterback? You get him some receivers, okay?
Makes sense to
They me. Got some decent receivers out there. I think they still have, like, Kenny Galladay
yeah.
and some other guys.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, why not? I mean, Devontae Smith, I know the last name's similar. He's got a Steve Smith-like mentality. He knows he's undersized, okay?
Yeah.
But did that stop him in college? Nope. He won a Heisman. A wide receiver
wins
the
Heisman
Trophy,
yes.
okay?
That's
amazing. It's either, you know, 90% of the time quarterback, sometimes running back. But a wide receiver win the Heisman, that shows something right there,
yes,
okay?
For
and
sure.
I think he would flourish with Jared Goff as his quarterback. I think Jared Goff is going to do pretty well, at least his first season in Detroit, just as a, you know, change of scenery, see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, plus two, I think this honestly is a good chance for Jared Goff just to get a fresh start, to be honest
with
you.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, being the number one overall pick in your draft, you obviously have a lot of expectations, too. But plus, too, when it's a city like L.A. and all that kind of stuff, and just that reputation that that franchise has had, whereas a franchise like the Lions hasn't had a lot of success recently. So a quarterback like Goff, who kind of need a fresh start just to kind of get that weight of Los Angeles off of him, I think him being in Detroit is definitely going to help. And obviously, if they choose to draft a receiver like Devontae Smith, that would be definitely – you know, good for him. For
yeah,
sure.
I think if Detroit keeps his pick, which is a segue to your prediction, if they keep this pick, they go Devontae Smith from Alabama. So,
okay,
what do you have with this seventh pick, Cody?
Okay, mine's a little different. I have the Lions trading away this pick.
All right.
I have them trading down, not too far, but I have them trading down with the New England Patriots.
Okay.
And I have the Patriots taking Justin Fields.
Mm-hmm.
I have them swapping picks, obviously, for a little bit more, but obviously we don't know the details. But yeah. I have them trading with New England, and I have the Patriots trading up and drafting Justin Fields.
Yep.
Because I honestly don't know how much longer Justin Fields is going to last on that board. I mean, I mean, obviously the Panthers, I don't think are going to draft him because they just traded for Sam Darnold. I'd be surprised if that happens. Obviously Miami, no. But what I'm saying is, but it's not towards the end of the top 10, it's after the top 10. It's once you get out of the top 10, you're kind of like, okay, how far is Justin Fields going to go before a team just says, okay, well, let's just pick him and just see what happens.
Right.
You know, like kind of like what the Packers did with Jordan Love.
Yeah.
I mean, because Jordan Love was really good, and you knew he was a first-round caliber talent, but he just went low.
Mm-hmm.
But with New England, obviously, I get they just re-signed Cam Newton to a prove-it deal again, and they gave him some extra weapons. I just think that Justin Fields is a really good – one, he's a really good safety net, in case Cam Newton just doesn't perform again. But two, once Cam's deal expires, who's to say they just won't bring him back just because they don't want to bring him back?
Right.
And because the Patriots would have Justin Fields, if this trade were to happen, then they would be able to already say, okay, we don't have Cam Newton anymore, but we got a really good quarterback who we can build our team around. Plus, Justin Fields can run like Cam, too. I know he's not as big as Cam, but Justin Fields has a pretty strong arm, as you saw in college. He's really good. And as far as his ability to scramble, he's really good at that, too. Probably the best scrambling quarterback out of this top, for sure. You know, so if you ask me, I say that the Lions trade away this pick to the Patriots, and the Patriots draft Justin Fields.
All right. Well, it's funny that you say that. You said my prediction, one pick early.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the Panthers are going to pick in the top 10.
Really?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nope. I think they're going to get a deal from New England that's too good to pass down, okay? I would love for them to get Sewell. I would love that, okay? I would think that's a good fit. I mean, you got a new quarterback, might as well get a new lineman, you know, to protect him, kind of like your thing was with Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
But with the eighth pick, I think the Panthers are going to trade it to New England for the 15th pick and, dare I say, Stephon Gilmore. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think they're going to have to give up a pretty good player to move into the top 10 along with that 15 pick.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to give up, have to trade somebody that you mightn't necessarily want to trade.
Right.
But if you're serious about getting your next quarterback after Cam Newton, I think you're going to have to make a sacrifice. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Because think about it. Panthers need a DB. Wouldn't hurt to have another one,
no.
Especially when Dante Jackson is
your,
as hit and miss as he is sometimes.
Well, plus he's your top corner, so
yeah.
Having obviously a Stephon Gilmore type player would just immediately change everything.
Now, that's a very far reach.
I mean, that's a very far reach, but let's be honest. Just having anybody on that Patriots defense would be really good.
It's going to have to be somebody that's a first stringer on their depth chart.
Oh, yeah, of course.
To get into that top 10 if the trade happens.
Right.
Okay? Because that's what I think. If the trade doesn't happen, I think we draft Penei Sewell. But if the trade does happen, we fall to 15, and we'll see if Sewell's still there. If not, we'll go another OL. That's what I really think is going to happen.
Okay.
That guy from last name Slater from Northwestern, I think.
Yeah.
He's not terrible either.
He's not at all.
He's not Penei Sewell, but that wouldn't be a bad second and get some equity in a new trade.
Of course.
But just like you said, New England moves up. Picks Justin Fields, okay?
Okay.
Learns from his, the guy he looked up to as a kid, Cam Newton, okay? There's pictures all over the internet of Justin Fields going to any Cam Newton camp that he can go to. Like little 13-year-old Justin Fields and Cam Newton hanging out.
Which is honestly crazy to think about that Cam's been in the NFL that long that potentially his replacement.
This is his 10th or 11th season. I mean, that's wild to think, you know.
But it's this crazy thing. It's been that long.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, just think. I mean, that was
He was drafted in 2011.
He was drafted in 11. Let's say Fields, I don't know, right off, is 21, 22 years old. And so that means he was 10 or 11 when he was drafted. You know, that's crazy to think.
That is crazy.
So, I mean, he's going to learn from the guy he looked up to, who he probably modeled his game after.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, like I said, he's not as tall as Cam, but he plays just like him just about.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if Belichick has moved on to that style of quarterback, you know, after just staying with the old school pocket QB that Tom Brady still is today, if he's moving on to the modern dual threat, why not pick Justin Fields?
Right.
Why not do what it takes to move up? Because, you know, as much as I enjoy Cam Newton and loved him in Carolina and cheered for him last year with the Patriots, it's not going to last forever, okay?
Right.
It really hasn't picked up at all, and it's kind of sad to see, okay?
Yeah.
And eventually, the running 30 times a game
isn't going to work.
Isn't going to work when he's barely passing. And so I think this season might be a wash for Cam. This is it. You know, with the Patriots, he teaches Fields his tricks, and it's Justin Fields' time.
Yeah.
Up in Boston. That's going to be interesting. Last two picks, Cody, and then we'll get to a couple quick little segments, and we'll probably close out the show because this has been a really good discussion.
Oh, yeah.
I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Yeah, same here.
Number 9, Miami is going to pick
Jalen Waddle.
So I got two.
Yeah.
I think they go get some weapons for Tua.
For sure. Absolutely. And to be honest with you, before the Broncos and Dolphins made a trade, I had Devontae Smith going to Miami. Because I, like, as far as the receivers, I had Ja'Marr Chase going first. And I knew that I just had a feeling that Devontae Smith's going to be second. It's just a matter of where he's going to go.
Right.
But I think they got a Jalen Waddle, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I think just simple to the fact, get some offensive weapons for Tua.
Absolutely,
Give him no excuse, okay? If you want Tua to be your quarterback, give him no excuse to not be, you know? And if he's not, he's not. No excuse about it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because I get tired of hearing, well, the dude didn't have – just not Tua, but just any quarterback in general. He didn't have any weapons around him. Sometimes you got to make your own weapons.
Right.
You know?
For sure. So I was about to say, man, sometimes you got to,
make
it.
If you give him – the weapons he needs, if it's on him, it's on him.
Well,
not saying that it is, but
Well, plus this year too is going to actually get a chance to be a full-time starter because Miami just kept doing the quarterback back and forth with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I honestly didn't understand why. But now that Tua is going to get a chance to start full-time, he's going to have a chance to, one, just have that feeling of knowing what it's like to be a guaranteed starter instead of wondering where he's going to be playing every week or not. You know, plus combine that with a really good wide receiver, I think that would definitely help him improve his game that much more.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely. And so last pick for our predictions, and we're going the same again, so I guess we can say the name again. So we agreed more than I thought we were going to. Cody,
yeah, for
I'm
sure.
Impressed. So 10th pick, Jerry's team, the Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
They're going to pick
Patrick Surtain,
the second from Alabama.
Oh.
The second.
The second, sorry.
Yeah, not his daddy. From Alabama. Okay?
Yes.
So, yeah, they go defense this year. You know, they went CeeDee Lamb last year.
Yeah.
That paid off pretty well.
Extremely
well. So, I think they just add an amazing defensive weapon.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Onto that defense to build that defense back up. Maybe, you know, this is Jerry's stepping stone to that old school 90s, how about them Cowboys defense?
Yeah.
Who knows? But, yeah, I don't see them passing up on Patrick Surtain.
No, not at all. And, like, to be honest with you, with the Cowboys, they're one of those teams, like, they're in a position right now to where they could honestly choose the best player available, and it would really help out their team, just especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Just because their defense is, I don't really know how you can describe it. It's just not been very good, to say the least, the last couple of years. But getting a guy like Patrick Surtain the second to help out, be that cornerstone corner.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Cornerstone corner to help out their defense would definitely help them out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if the Panthers do fall out of the top 10, I still think they go OL, whether that's Sewell, if he's still there at 15 somehow.
Makes sense to me.
Dream situation, Kyle Pitts is there at 8. And our GM says, nope, not taking any trades, we're getting Kyle Pitts.
Hey.
Okay. That'd be amazing. I'd be overjoyed for that.
Absolutely, man.
But realistically.
Kyle Pitts is who I want.
Yes.
The Panthers to draft. I just don't think it's going to
happen. Yeah, I was talking with my buddy Isaac Cook the other day. I said, dream pick, Pitts. legit pick, probably Sewell if we don't trade. So I think that's what's going to happen. And, you know, it just felt good to talk some football on here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's been too long. But, Cody, it is 5 o'clock our time. It's actually 5:05.
Yeah, 5:05, man.
So let's roll through a couple quick little segments.
Okay.
And then we'll close out the show with the Minor League Baseball Team of the Week. And then we'll get on up the road. So, yeah, that sound good to you?
That sounds like a plan, man.
All right. So, yes or no.
Okay.
Yes or no. Should have Madison Bumgarner's no hitter counted as a no hitter? Yes, it should have.
Yes.
It happened against my Braves. Okay, you know what? He should have got two of them because they only hit one hit and
one hit in the first game of the double header.
So I'll say it simple as that, and we can maybe build off of it next week too.
Yeah,
but I wanted to mention it on here because
absolutely,
that was so controversial. If you're not going to count that as a no hitter, don't play seven innings.
Right,
simple as that.
Right,
go back
for sure.
To 9 inning double headers.
Right, and for that reason, I completely agree with you, but I also have one other quick reason.
Yeah.
According to the stats, I did check this out. They do count seven-inning games as complete games.
Right.
So why do you count seven-inning games as a complete game for a pitcher, but you don't count a seven-inning no-hitter as a no-hitter?
Exactly. Makes no sense at all.
No.
Okay? What the heck, Major League Baseball? Doesn't
I don't
make
know.
Sense at all.
No.
You're so good in so many ways, but the things that you're so inconsistent with are just so frustrating.
Yeah.
It makes no sense at all.
No.
Okay? I like the seven-inning double-hitters. Double-headers. It makes it more interesting, okay?
Oh, because yeah, absolutely.
Because it gives the players emphasis to take that game one serious.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Used to on doubleheaders, oh, we're playing 2 9-inning games. Oh, I'm gonna breeze through this first game. You know, who cares? I'll save my energy for the second one.
Right.
No, with this one, I like the seven.
Yeah, same
more
here. To be honest with you, yeah.
You know? And even I caught myself on like the top of the six, like, oh shoot, next inning is last inning. You know, and so, but yeah, absolutely, that should count as a no hitter.
Oh,
if
yes.
You're going to have 7-inning doubleheaders, they should count as no hitters if that happens.
Absolutely,
yeah,
man.
Absolutely.
100%.
And in other news with baseball, the Dodgers are still good.
Yes.
So, and the Padres are good too. That whole Trevor Bauer, Fernando Tatis thing,
well,
that was fantastic.
That was something I was going to mention really quickly about the whole Trevor Bauer and Fernando Tatis thing. So what'd you think about that?
That was hilarious. Because
that was funny.
And I liked that Bauer
appreciate
that because
yes.
As big of a troll as Trevor Bauer is, I like that he can also take it too. Because
yes.
There are some people out there that love to dish out stuff like that, but as soon as it goes back to them, oh, they just lose it. You know,
like one guy I'm thinking of is I don't think he plays anymore, but Carlos Gomez.
Oh yeah,
Gomez.
Oh, I remember you talking about
Carlos Gomez. Like I remember when he played for
the Brewers, right?
When he played for the Brewers, especially. I mean,
yeah.
Like he's played for other teams. He's done that too. But I remember especially when he played for the Brewers and he hit that homer against Atlanta.
Uh huh.
And he was like pumping it up. And,
I love
like,
that highlight.
And Brian McCann got in his face, but he was acting all like mad and upset about it. And I'm like, well, dude, you just. Like,
yeah.
Watched the home run
he
and
watched
waited
it.
For 5 seconds.
He chirped all around the bases.
He ran all the way to
and
back.
And when somebody chirped back, he got mad.
Right, for
yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like when McCann blocked the plate.
Yeah, he blocked
hilarious.
The plate and wouldn't let him cross.
That was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
But
the fact that Trevor Bauer did that was
yes,
cool.
Yes, I liked that he can also get picked back at and enjoy it. Okay?
Yes.
Now, he got a little butt hurt when they found out that Tatis looked down. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not cheating. It's just frowned upon. You know, it's not. He didn't break any rules. Okay.
Right.
Because well, if he can see it, he can see it.
Well, I honestly think that since last year, I think Tatis just likes breaking unwritten rules
oh, yeah.
Now.
Yeah, that's the whole theme of him and
right.
With everything, which I think is cool too. Okay,
yes, yeah,
he's like, you know what? This isn't my daddy's game anymore. This is my game. I'm gonna play it.
Yeah.
Which his daddy was a beast too. Tatis Senior was awesome.
Well, I think it's funny that his dad hit 2 grand slams in the same inning against the same pitcher, and then he hit 2 home runs in the same game against the same pitcher.
Yeah.
Plus, too, that pitcher was Trevor Bauer, so it's not like it was just any old pitcher either.
Yeah, and
so that was pretty cool.
That was really cool, and. To go to NBA real quick, like I said, we're going to watch the Hornets play the Bucks. That Hornets are 19th in the power rankings. Bucks are number 7.
Yes.
So that's a pretty big, you know,
yeah,
gap.
That's a pretty big gap there. That's a big gap in the power rankings, but the Hornets have played really well against the Bucks this year.
Yes.
So if that trend continues, that would definitely be a pretty fun game to watch.
And in the last 10, they're almost dead even, okay? The Bucks last 10, 5-5. Hornets 4-6, okay? And they're coming off that huge dominating win over Boston on ESPN, okay?
That was awesome.
That was not typical Charlotte primetime, you know, national TV.
No.
Usually we just curl up in a ball and say, don't hurt me too bad, okay?
Right.
But this time we went out there and we beat up on the Celtics,
yeah.
Okay? And
hard.
I love Kemba Walker. Don't miss him. Okay,
nope.
You can love people and not miss them. Okay, that's how I am with Kemba Walker right now, and so hopefully they can transition that momentum they had on Sunday to tonight being Tuesday.
Yes.
And hopefully we're predicting correctly a Hornets victory come Thursday morning.
That would definitely put the icing on the cake for our trip, man, for sure. Well, plus two, that would be the first time I've seen the Hornets win in person live.
We're going to break that streak tonight.
Yes.
All right, so give me your minor league team of the week, and let's get in the truck.
All right, so this week's minor league baseball team of the week, if I can pull it up, is the Kannapolis Cannonballers.
Yeah.
And guys, I know we just talked about the Cannonballers.
Sounds a little fixed.
In the intro, and I get that this sounds fixed, but I asked Neil to give me a random letter of the alphabet. He said K.
I
looked, and this was not fixed. We both found out, like, spontaneously, that the Kannapolis Cannonballers are the only minor league baseball team that
the
has
country.
Their name starts with a K.
Yeah.
In the entire country.
Yeah.
Yes. So for all of you that think this is fixed, it's not. This was completely random, and we just now realized this. But this week's minor league baseball team of the week is the Kannapolis Cannonballers. They obviously play in Kannapolis, North Carolina,
yep.
which isn't too far from here, about an hour, I'd say.
Yep, it was exactly 1 hour from my house to the baseball field.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
That was a pretty good guess, too, then, for sure. But anyway, they were founded as a team in 1995. They were part of the South Atlantic League from 1995 to 2020. And obviously now they're in the Low A East as part of the new minor league realignment.
Do you know what their original name was in the 90s? I learned that when I was at the ballpark last night.
What was the original?
They were the Piedmont Phillies.
The Piedmont Phillies, yeah. That's what I was just fixing to say, that they have been called the Spartanburg Phillies. The Piedmont Phillies, when they became the...
When they moved, yeah.
Yeah, when they moved. And that was just for one season.
Yeah.
They were also called the Piedmont Boll Weevils
yep.
from 1996 to 2000.
Yeah.
And from 2001 to 2019, they were known as the Kannapolis Intimidators. And I went to a lot of Kannapolis Intimidators games, so I remember them being the Intimidators.
Yeah.
Fondly.
Tribute to Dale Earnhardt and stuff, which is really cool.
Yes, for sure. Absolutely.
You know, and with the Cannonballers thing, the guy has goggles and a mustache like Dale Earnhardt.
Right,
which is
for
a
sure.
cool little ode to the what was. You know?
Like, that was still a really cool way to honor him, even though it's not like directly named after him anymore,
yeah.
for sure. But they have been with the Philadelphia Phillies from 1995 to 2000. And since 2001 until now, they have been with the Chicago White Sox.
Yep.
And like we have mentioned, they are a low A team. Their ballpark is Atrium Health Ballpark.
Beautiful place.
Extremely nice place. I haven't been there, but I've seen pictures. I know you've been there, like you said, at the first part of the show, and I'm looking forward to going there for sure. The general manager is Matt Hillward. I think I say his name. And their manager is, I'm going to probably just mess up this guy's name, is Guillermo Quiroz.
Hey, you did better than I could.
Yeah. yeah. And their mascot's name is Boomer.
Boomer. Boomer the baller.
Yeah.
Boomer the baller. But yeah, that's really cool. Well, cool deal. Thanks, Cody. Thank y'all for this listening to this NFL draft special.
Yes.
I know we flew some other ones. By the way, Parrish was at the race at Talladega. And
really?
He saw another Penske driver win, which is hilarious because Keselowski stole that one at the end.
Yeah.
And he was so excited because Erik Jones was right there at the lead with like 15 laps left. And then the caution came out. He lost the lead on the restart. And all of a sudden, somehow, Keselowski comes out winning. So I text Parrish real quick. I said, how mad are you right now? He said, you don't even want to know. so that might not be word for word, but that was basically our conversation there. So
that's funny.
But we'll talk more NASCAR next week. They're at Kansas over the weekend, and we'll have more time for other stuff. But thank y'all for listening along. That's our show. Cody, we got to ride up to Charlotte. You ready?
I'm ready, man. Let's go.
All right, let's go. Bye.
And thank you so much again, Bradley Brown, for wanting to come on to the show. And thank you so much for a really awesome time talking to you, man. I really appreciate it.